Welcome to the Cashflow Champs podcast, the show where we demystify real estate investing so you have the tools you need to gain financial freedom through passive investments in real estate. And now your host, Cashflow Champs Managing Partner, Prashant Kumar.
Well, hello, hello. This is Prashant Kumar from Cashflow Champs. Today I have a young guest of mine, a friend of mine who was referred to me by one of my other friends, CJ Yamada. CJ, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me today.
So CJ Yamada, CJ is an entrepreneur who is passionate about sustainability and environment. He has primarily been in solar industry since 2016, started his own solar business in 2019, Solar in One. After learning about multifamily real estate market, CJ was inspired to bring his expertise in the sustainability to invest in multifamily business and founded Yamada Capital. He's originally from Japan. He lives in Las Vegas. He owns his business. He's in commercial real estate for 2.5 years. He has been GP on 79-unit senior housing business in Wisconsin. And the last time I heard, he had 98 units also in the contract. So CJ, again, thank you so much for this Cashflow Champs Real Estate podcast. We want to know from horse's mouth, what is the unique background you have in real estate and how are you planning to pursue it further?
Yeah, I guess I'm going to do a little detailed intro. Thank you for making a great introduction for me. I still own my solar business, mainly doing businesses in California, Nevada, Arizona. Those are sun states, and it's going great. I started looking for another vehicle to pump my cash from the solar business and, you know, let them work for me instead of I keep working for capital. And just like anybody else probably listening to this channel, I picked the real estate, I picked the multifamily, and I started listening different podcasts, reading books, joining mastermind, going meetups, started educating myself and growing my network. And first deal I joined is an LP deal in Texas. And last year, my partners and I closed 49 units senior housing in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a really good government subsidy for senior housing businesses. So for this deal particular, 99% of income comes from government subsidy, and we are getting, just because Social Security went up about 9% last year, we're getting, you know, same increase with the same tenant, same building, just a different paperwork. I think that's amazing. And since the income comes from the government, it's really strong recession, inflation-proof business. And so I decided to, number one, invest my capital and bring my friends' families' capital as a syndicator. And as you introduced, we are closing 80 units this week, and 90 units just went under contract. So hopefully, you know, we can increase and bring more scale of economy in that sense to bring the best service for senior citizens and investors.
So that's super awesome, CJ. I would love to learn a little bit more about the subsidy from the government. Tell us a little bit more about that, you know, because a lot of people, I mean, we had a virtual summit this weekend, and there were like so much interest from folks to get into this assisted living space, even though the virtual summit was for multifamily. And I feel like I should have our own virtual summit on assisted living. I would like to learn more about what has been your experience about government subsidy.
Government subsidy is a part of a Medicare network program, and you know, it's a lower than private pay, like customers pay out of pocket. But it's not like a low income program or anything. It's more like an insurance program, I should say. So we have way more demand and supply in terms of, you know, senior citizens who need to be served versus senior housing business. And we think it's a great opportunity. I will recommend your listeners to check with your own state. For example, Las Vegas, Nevada, where I am, people are moving to Vegas to retire. You know, 80 million baby boomers are getting old and cold. That's the phrase I always hear. So a lot of retirees come to Vegas. And I guess Nevada has enough, you know, a big economy that doesn't require government subsidy. So there's no such a thing. But Wisconsin, I've heard that Oregon is too. There's a good government subsidy, and business can be really profitable if you do a right job.
So you are saying that Wisconsin and Oregon are the places where it is possible to get a government subsidy for assisted living business?
I think so in terms of Oregon. I just spoke with one of my brokers yesterday.
Okay. In addition to these two states, do you have insight into other states also which are providing subsidy for assisted living space?
That I'm not sure on top of my head. I should have done more researches for this. Sorry.
And what is the process? I mean, tell our listeners, I mean, if you know the process in terms of
right. This
concern, you know, what is the process, how to apply, how to find such tenants for your space that you are creating?
Right. So there are several agencies dealing with those government subsidies. In case of Wisconsin, it's called MCO, Managed Care Organizations. So they step in between government, the local government, and senior housing businesses to make sure they're getting what they get paid. What should they get paid? And then they are providing what they should provide.
So these MCOs are really probably brokers. They play as if they are brokers.
Brokers, like agencies, I will say. Yeah. Okay.
And they are the ones who will refer you the tenants or the guests, I should say, for your space.
Correct. Okay. Kind of middle party between government service providers and customers.
Got it. And how difficult it is? I mean, tell us a little bit more about how difficult
it is. So that's it is difficult. I will say difficult to buy. I guess it's not only senior housing business, but there are way more demand still than supply. And once you buy a business in real estate that already has the cash flow from those agencies and legit license, there's no much stuff you have to do to set up a new thing rather than, you know, getting license and update a business. But I haven't done, you know, even thought about starting our own senior housing business from scratch, building and getting license and everything. That's what we, you know, what we don't do. We just take over the businesses already running and cash flowing. So with that experience, that's not that difficult.
Got it. So basically, what are the typical cap rates that you get when you buy a business, and what is the value add that you provide?
It's all over percent. It's just like buying multifamily or any business. We're buying business in this mm-hmm. case. Cap rate can be more than 10%, around the 5%, and depends on, you know, from who you buy, when you buy, what situation you buy. Cap rate wise, yeah, I would say six to, you know, the greatest one I've seen is like a 12%.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And do you do value add or something on those in the business?
Yes, not as much as traditional conventional multifamily. Senior housing, the difficult part of senior housing business is high expense ratio. Usually the 70% is a borderline. If you are on the 60s doing great job, we've seen a lot of pop and mom businesses running like 80-90%, and it's still cash flows if you self-manage amazingly. So as far as value add, we don't do a lot of like a renovation or hardware building value add, but main value add strategies we do is a cost reduction. So we want to look up, you know, mid-sized senior housing owned by 60s, 70s. The one of previous owners joked like during a due diligence visit, joked like I'm ready to retire and ready to go to, you know, this senior housing. So they are in that age and they're ready to, you know, retire and get the ownership responsibilities off their shoulders. So those cases, you know, when you visit their facilities, receipts, invoices are all over the desk, and the fanciest technology they have is like Excel sheet on your, like a big Windows computer. And that is a good sign for us because there's a lot of room for us to optimize the expense. And even the same income, the same tenant, when we reduce the expenses, that's extra cash flow, extra profit. And so we take it, that part is the biggest value add strategy.
Typically, what does it mean? I mean, yes, you are putting the technology, but how is it reducing the cost in terms of running the business? From an operation standpoint, like food and clothing,
yeah,
and payroll, where do you
yeah.
see?
Two things I can think of now. One is the biggest expense is definitely labor. It's mm-hmm. not an apartment, so there has to be you know, a nurse at least in even a small building. Depends on the category, but we are acquiring now a business that needs to have nurse, you know, a few nurses 24/7. And so labor is the biggest buy. Yeah. And what you can do is instead of, you know, sticking with a traditional shift organization on a paper or Excel sheet, you can install software to optimize, hourly shifts management. When, you know, a nurse takes 5, 7, 10 minutes overtime every day times 3-4 nurses times 3-4 buildings, it can be like a 6-digit expenses easily. So what we want to do is visualize and optimize labor expense, not necessarily try not to pay them, but we want them to work, you know, as much as it needs, and we want them to get paid, but we're trying to avoid unnecessary expenses, which can be, you know, curved out by available technology. That's number one. Number two is a scalability. When you have like 20 units senior housing versus 200 in the same town or same market, buying a food, buying toilet papers, scale matters. So that's what we are trying to do by adding, you know, similar businesses in the same market so that we can have a scaled economy.
So when you say you are trying to do it, I know you are an operator, basically in the sense that you are an investor, so to say, but is the operator who is running the show, they are the ones who are doing some of these things. I mean, do you get involved in a day-to-day operations in the sense, you know, what software to choose, you know, where to cut the cost, or your property management company already knows what to do?
Yeah, I'm kind of, you know, talking like a specialist right now, but I only do like, you know, 30 minutes weekly meeting, then get reported by management team. We manage them. So no day-to-day jobs at all. No.
Got it. And how are the, so I mean, on this topic again, how do the business run? I mean, do they form an LLC and they own the account receivable, accounts payable, and you just see the report and then you talk to them and you provide the equity or do the debt service yourself? How do you do that?
Yeah, exactly what you say. And of course, you have to stabilize the asset and business, you know, after a lot of so many transactions. And so right after closing, it doesn't go like that easy. We meet weekly, and some of our teams, they talk with the management team more often to get things done. But yeah, exactly what you say.
Got it. So the management team is actually responsible even to market your property and bring the residents, or residents yes. are already there.
Yes. And again, there's an agency for the public pay government deal. So they source the tenants.
So they get it from MCO organization, you know, managed care organization. But you have the marketing also for each of your property. I mean, yeah. The managed company has a marketing set up.
Yep.
And how difficult it is to find these management companies?
Easy to find, difficult to, you know, successfully grow together. Mm-hmm. So even taking across references and making sure, you know, background is okay, customer reviews and everything, you fail when you fail. So that's the really key, like a biggest partnership in commercial real estate business.
So do they become partner of you, or they are just fee-based organization?
Fee-based. We own everything.
Okay. What is typically the, you know, charges that they, you know, they put on the bottom line in terms of?
Oh, same as multifamily, 5%, 8%, 10%.
Okay. So similar kind of the gross. Yes. Of the gross revenue. Yep. But you do end up paying the payroll, though.
Mm-hmm.
The payroll is yours, but they charge 5% of the gross or whatever, 4% of the gross. Is that mm-hmm. how it works?
Depends on the income and the size, but yeah.
So all these MCOs, their rates are cheaper than, lower than private pay, or?
Yes.
How are they?
The 80 units we are closing right now is actually a portfolio, 30 units private pay and 50 units public pay. They're in the same market, but they don't compete because the private pay is actually really higher end, and they have individual bathroom in each unit, extra dishes in each meal, extra support, high quality couch and bed, you know, just like, I don't know, Holiday Inn hotel versus Ritz-Carlton or whatever. Those, you know, different markets exist even in the senior housing. So income-wise, yes, private pay is still more profitable or higher income.
But in terms of one facility, can one facility accept private pay and government pay both?
Yeah, hybrid is possible, yeah.
It is possible to have both of them in the same facility.
Correct.
But with a different rate.
That's correct. Yes, and different payer, private pocket versus government pocket.
Got it. How difficult it is? I mean, do you have the delinquencies and stuff in your business? You know, late payments, no. Things like that.
No.
That doesn't happen in this business. You know, those who come.
That doesn't happen. No.
They end up. So what's the difference? I mean, difference in terms of private pay. Private. Let's say private pay is 4,000 or 4,500. What is the public? I mean, government subsidy.
Oh, I don't know on top of my head. Yeah, but more than 10% lower, I remember. I might be wrong, yeah.
Got it. So, and how difficult it is to find such portfolios or such properties in these states, you know, that's my next question. You know, if somebody wants to get in, for our listeners, you know, how do they look for these, you know?
Oh, same as multifamily, talk to brokers, find the senior housing businesses and in your market, in your parameters, the number of units, and start talking to the owners. Again, it's really hard to get in, just like, you know, any other asset class. Once you're in, you know, deals will chase you. You don't have to chase deals.
Okay. So you are saying that it is easy to find these deals, basically.
I mean, once you're in, yeah.
I have had different experience, you know. I mean, I see a lot of deals out there, but whether they will work out, I mean, the numbers sometimes, you know, as you said, you know, some of the expense ratios are like 80-90%, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And do you look at those low cap rate deals and think that, you know, you would increase the NOI or reducing the expense? Is that your strategy when you get into these deals?
So one more time, do I increase the income, as you say?
No, my question is, let's say you are buying at 5 cap, you know, where expense ratio is 80%. Uh-huh. Is your strategy to buy at 80% expense ratio and try to decrease the expense by putting more technology in the asset so that you could increase your NOI and hence the valuation of the business?
Yeah, that's what we do. That's what we love to do all day long. Of course, like a lower market rate, that's great. Apartment business turnover takes, you know, usually 12 months to wait. Mm-hmm. Reducing expense, we can start it day one, done, profit.
Help me understand, you know, when you are buying, you know, how many deals are you analyzing on a regular basis, you know? What is the valuation? Actually, my question is, what is the valuation of the real estate and what is the valuation of the business? How do you go about that?
Evaluation the business and real estate?
Yes.
Real estate doesn't provide anything once you buy. Business makes cash flow. So initial investment-wise, of course, we have to pay both real estate and business. And pro forma calculation-wise, we look at the business solely and where the market rent are at, expense ratio, if it's high or, you know, unusually low, what is happening, take a look at numbers. If you like, submit LOI. Now we have to do like a real job, checking every single boxes in terms of documentation, paperwork, and hardware, roof, foundations, floors, and everything, leaks. Pretty much same as the multifamily.
So really speaking, you know, it is a multifamily business. I mean, really speaking, it's a the rental business from an investor standpoint.
Correct.
Your cap rate is a little bit higher, but you have more opportunity to reduce rent because you can reduce a lot of inefficiencies by going to a proven property management company or the asset management company who manages your operations in an efficient way. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, absolutely. And we actually, keep posting blogs, and I just published the ebook. We try to share as much as possible on the closed deal on the website. It's yamadacapital.com. And you can download the ebook and you can schedule one-to-one call with me if you have more questions. But pretty much what I said is, you know, what is happening in my business.
So typically, what are the returns that investors are getting for the project that you are working? I mean, what is the typical
returns
that you are offering on your deals?
We are trying to close deals with a very conservative underwriting. We want to have a double-digit cash return. Again, not guaranteeing, just, you know, trying to present and 2x equity multiple. So double-digit cash return, annualized return, and doubling our money every 5 years. That's the goal.
Got it. So folks are, I mean, investors are getting double-digit cash return, cash on cash on a yearly basis?
A quarterly basis.
Quarterly basis, you know, obviously overall yearly return is double-digit.
Yearly return, that's correct, yeah. That's correct.
Got it. And you...
I mean, not guaranteed, that's what we try and plan.
Understood. I mean, there's no guarantee in anything, actually. So how are lenders looking? I mean, how...
So first few deals were kind of smaller deals, less than 50 units. And we dealt with local banks and credit union. They know how this senior housing government money works in the local state and the county. So it was a good deal, I will say. And then the one we are closing now, 90 units, has a good size and borrowing amount. So we are going to be able to work with the HUD program, the government lending program. So it's good. So this 90 units we are closing now, lending side is HUD, a government loan, and income side is also, state subsidy. So both sides are kind of not protected, but supported by those big guys, and really happy about it when I, you know, invest my money into it.
Got it. What are the barriers of entry for you? What do you think are the barriers of entry in this business for a normal investor who wants to come in and do what you are doing?
To acquire deals, you mean?
Yeah. Hmm?
Oh, it's all about relationship, I will say. I didn't have any contact, I'm originally from Japan, and I didn't know where the Wisconsin is, to be honest, before I acquired my first deal. And when I landed at Wisconsin airport the first time and I stopped at the gas station to grab some breakfast, and a lady at the cashier say, "Are you from somewhere warm? You're underdressed." So I didn't know even weather and where it's located and stuff. But I had a partners with enough experience, network, assets in the local market and even outside of the market. And I happen to know him. I happen to, stay in touch with his team, and opportunity came. So I always tell, I actually run the largest multifamily meetup in Las Vegas. Search multifamily meetup in Las Vegas, and it's mine. 440 members, one of the fastest growing meetup in the nation. We always emphasize your network is a net worth. Your network is a net worth. So maybe if I didn't make a first call to the current partner 2 and 3 years ago, I might not have any portfolio in Wisconsin. So relationship, like a Google search, mass email, I don't think it's going to work. You got to know that person, but you don't know who he is or she is.
This is awesome. CJ, you have shared a lot of information, and sorry that I went deeper into certain topics,
No, that's okay. I love it.
Awesome. So we wanted to make sure that folks get the complete picture, I mean, on the top, it is okay, but we want to know deeper thing, if somebody wants.
Yeah.
And that's how people get to know that you are experienced in the area.
And again, we do we've done so far a lot of 506B deals, and meaning investors or everybody's in their circles. My money, my friends, families, previous relationships. So if you are interested in knowing more about, what we do, just give me a call or set up a call on my website, yamadacapital.com.
Awesome, awesome. How open are you to start business partnership with new investors? New investors or new folks who want to do what you are doing, kind of bring them up to the speed in a new market or maybe in Wisconsin. How open are you to explore the future opportunities?
I'm always open for any opportunities, and my niche focus is, you know, Wisconsin senior housing. But if you know, the partner is legit, honest, good integrity, good experience, and we can work together, yeah, I'm open.
That is super, super awesome, CJ. Thank you so much for your time. It has been so valuable. You know, folks, you know how to reach CJ. You know, I can keep on calling him CJ. Hope it is okay.
Basically, that's fine. Yeah, that's my name. That's me.
So you can reach out to him at yamadacapital.com. And anything else I have missed, CJ, which you want to communicate to the listeners?
If you want to be, you know, passive investors, I will say know who the GPs are, the general partners are, before the market and deal, their experience, their relationship with you, their integrity. It's a people business. So good deal can fall, you know, go south, depends on like who manages it. And if you want to, the operating side, a GP, as I say, one contact can change your career. Your network is a net worth. So keep doing, you know, phone calls, going meetup, meetings, networking, seminar, and, you know, one swing might change your career.
CJ, one last question. Do you recommend any senior assisted living related resources, any conferences, any books that might be helpful to our listeners?
No, actually, that's what I'm looking for, like a good resources, books, mastermind, network. But this industry is kind of closed environment, I will say, the multifamily. So broker, lenders, and local government agencies are not trying to, you know, explore themselves as much as multifamily.
Awesome. Awesome. CJ, again, thank you so much for your time and congratulations for a small baby at home. You know, it is.
Thank
it is
you so much. And sorry for the noise.
Music for, no, it is music for the ears. You know, and you know how it is. You know, it's so glad to hear that you have a small baby at home. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the Cashflow Champs podcast. Cashflow Champs partners with busy working professionals and entrepreneurs that want to build and maintain generational wealth through real estate. Visit cashflowchamps.com to learn more about us.